This is Ryan Nilsson sitting with Suzanne Darwish. It's August 25th, and we're in Portland, Oregon at the National Farm Worker Ministry board meeting. You're fine right there. And I'm just going to ask you a few questions. We're sitting in a dorm room in Portland State University, having a little conversation. So, Suzanne, will you tell me about how you first got involved with the National Farm Worker Ministry?
It was my first job out of seminary in 1959. I was actually hired by Doug Still, although I knew Chris Hartmar because he was a year behind me in seminary. Not that he was younger than I was, but he'd done his Navy service. And so that made him two or three years after he would have started normally. So I was just coming out for a summer job. I had a brother who lived here and with his family, so I thought, well, this is a good chance to see him and his family and find out more about farm workers. And so we went to, I had a group of college students and a team, and we were assigned to Sevastopol, which is north of San Francisco. And we slept in the Methodist church, in the basement of the Methodist church there, and used their kitchen to fix our meals. And I remember that Charlie Schultz came over to see us and welcome us, because at that time he lived in Sevastopol and he was a member of that church. You know, he's the guy who wrote Peanuts. Yeah.
So how did you first hear about the ministry? When you were in seminary?
In seminary, yeah. Yeah, I thought I was just coming for the summer, but then I got hooked and I stayed. There was an opening in Corcoran, and so I went to Corcoran. And I spent the rest of my three years there in Corcoran.
So why did you stay?
I learned just enough about the issue of farm labor and what desperate lives they live and how rejected they often are by the communities in which they work and how desperately they wanted to put down roots and have a place to live and keep their kids in school all year. Instead of being migrants and following the crops, they were looking for health care and housing and education, just like most families are. The only problem is that the churches were full of growers, and they didn't want them to stay. They wanted them to go on to the next town. They didn't want to be responsible for them. So Corcoran was a mill town, a cotton mill town, and the whole community was dominated by J.G. Boswell Company. There were a couple of smaller cotton companies, the Salyers, and I'm drawing a blank on some of the other names, but J.G. Boswell was the big one, and his company really dominated the town. The political system, the school board, all the businesses, I mean, everybody worked for him or wanted to please him. So
some of those early dynamics you saw when you first started working with the National Farm Worker Ministry, do you feel like they've changed over the years?
Oh, they've changed greatly. Not that the conditions have improved that much, but the job of the staff has changed dramatically while I was there, because Doug Still applied for a grant to give us training in community development. And whereas when I first came, we were kind of like the Lady Bountiful type character. You know, we had a storeroom full of clothes and foodstuffs in the Latino Methodist church, and people that were in need would come to us for it. And I had two young Church of the Brethren boys who were young men who were working with me. They were conscientious objectors, and so they ran a boys club. And we did a teenage club together, tried to offer educational type programs and fun programs as well, fun events. And we were able to get some of the churches to donate their facilities. The teenage club met at the Presbyterian Church in Corcoran. And the Methodist, as I said, let us have their storeroom. and several of our teachers were recruited from the various churches, like a sewing teacher, a nutrition teacher, teaching. This would be with the adults, primarily women, actually. And then after we had this session in community development with Fred Ross Sr., have you heard of him? Yeah. And he, of course, was trained by Saul Alinsky. And Cesar Chavez also gave us some training. We went to visit him, and he was working for the CSO at that time, Community Service Organization. And so when we finished that, our jobs just changed dramatically. And instead of doing... it's not that we gave up Sunday school and Vacation Bible School, but we added a lot of other things to our jobs, like visiting folks in their homes and finding out what they really wanted, what they needed for the community to offer them, and what they were looking for. And we registered a lot of people to vote, and then we embarked on a campaign for public low-cost housing, and we won. Not single-handedly. There were a lot of people involved in this campaign all over the county. But public housing did go up in Corcoran. And so for me, that was a good thing. For the churches, it was a little hard to take because that wasn't what they thought the migrant ministry was all about. You know how if you give a basket of food at Thanksgiving or Christmas, you feel good, you think you've done a really good thing, but you haven't changed the structure at all, and in terms of it's just a one-day event. The good doesn't last very long. You feel better, but you shouldn't, because it's such a brief, fleeting thing. So after we won the campaign for public low-cost housing, the Presbyterian Church in Corcoran, and I am Presbyterian, their session voted to withdraw their support of the migrant ministry. So that was a blow to me and a blow to the migrant ministry as well. And I decided that my service was no longer going to be valuable there. And so, but this is 3 years. This didn't happen overnight. So at the end of 3 years, I left and I went to work for Church World Service in Algeria, and I didn't come back to this country until... because I met my husband overseas and married and lived in Baghdad for 10 years and came back in 75 and then slowly began to get more involved. Have you heard the name Jean Giordano? She was head of the Orange County Interfaith Committee to Aid Farm Workers for many years, and so it wasn't long before I met her. And also the Kennedys founded our committee. What are we in, our 46th year or something, 47th, I think. And so with Chris and Jean and Marty Schrank and some of the folks that have been with us for a long time. And so we would have fundraisers twice a year, once for the union. The union hadn't been formed way back then. It was in the process in the late 60s and early 70s. So we do two fundraisers, one for the union and one for the ministry. And then in between, we try to do advocacy. And Jean and Roy, her husband, had us out leafletting in front of grocery stores that were carrying grapes or lettuce that we wanted them to boycott, and so we tried to put pressure on them and that kind of activity.
When, as you described that shift in the Presbyterian Church, at least the local one, kind of withdrawing their support, were there other churches that stuck with you all or the ministry more generally in these kind of movements?
Yeah, the Presbyterians were the only one that whose session actually took a stand, but that's also because of the the way these churches are governed. In the Presbyterian Church, you know, the session has a lot of power, whereas, say, in the Presbyterian Church or the Episcopal Church, it's the bishop that or the district superintendent that has the power. And none of the ministers took a position against us. I think they understood what was going on, but it was hard to educate their congregations into what was our role as Christians vis-a-vis these farm workers. So,
well, can you tell me a little bit more about that and kind of how you see your beliefs or what it means that this is your role as Christian to do this kind of work?
Well,
I'm sorry.
Can you stop it?
Sure.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hello? You're asking me about how I see my Christian faith as vis-a-vis farm workers?
As impacting your work with the National Farm Worker Ministry.
Yeah. I don't know how I got this feeling, but if there's injustice towards anyone, if people are treated poorly, I feel that it's our role to do something about it. And I think the Bible, especially the New Testament, is full of Jesus' instructions to care for the poor, to care for the oppressed, and that we just can't turn our backs on people who are struggling and living such miserable lives. And it makes me very angry and upset that we're still fighting some of the same battles this year that we fought so many years ago when I first had my first job, like pesticides, for example, and stoop labor and inadequate water and heat stroke. I mean, these are things that we shouldn't have to be dealing with. If 15 farm workers die in the fields of California because of lack of water or heat exhaustion, I mean, there's something wrong with this picture. California has the best laws in the nation, but they're not enforced because we have thousands of farms and we don't have enough inspectors, and we never will have because of our budget crisis and our priorities and where we put money. So I think as Christians, we need to support the union, and that doesn't mean unequivocally. I mean, if they do something that's wrong, we would say something about it. But I see that as the only means to ensure that farm workers work under decent living conditions, and I just think it's very important. So, and I feel as Christians, we all eat. And so we have a stake in the way our food arrives on our table or in the grocery store, and it should be a concern of ours. I don't want to eat food that's been picked by people who died to pick it, and I don't think anybody does if they really knew about it. If they could go out and visit the fields and see what it's like out there under the hot sun, picking grapes or tomatoes or what have you. It's not a job that anybody would really crave. I don't see a long line of people waiting to get these jobs. So I think the condition should be better.
So how do you talk to Christians that are more of the persuasion of that Presbyterian church that you mentioned when you're representing the ministry or just yourself as a person of faith?
Yeah, I think that's a hard question, because I think most Christians have a generous heart, and if a need is presented to them, they want to help. If you needed food, if you needed furniture, if you needed clothes, the churches are ready to help. It's only when it gets a little bit more complicated and we're asking people to work on advocacy, to work for justice, that it's hard to get people to understand what that means, and that it might mean walking in a march up the 5 freeway to Sacramento, or or demonstrating in front of Governor Brown's office, doing something to call attention to the plight of farm workers. They are our brothers and our sisters, our fellow human beings. And their lives are just as valuable in God's sight as ours, I think. I don't like this we and they mentality. I mean, us against them. We're all together in this world. So.
You mentioned earlier that there are certain things that you feel haven't changed. You're fighting the same battles that you were fighting decades ago. Are there significant progresses that you've seen, improvements that you've seen in either the lives of farm workers or the whole climate in which this conversation happens over the span of your work with the ministry?
Well, they got rid of the short-handled hope, for one thing. That was progress. But then it seems to me I read or heard somewhere else that they have something else that involves stoop labor. So it's not completely obliterated. We still have these struggles with stoop labor and working in the hot sun, inadequate shade. It's hard to provide shade in the fields. I mean, they need the sun for the products to grow for agriculture. And so to provide shade is not easy, but it's the law in California. So in North Carolina, you have the problem with the pesticides too, don't you, with the tobacco workers. Mm-hmm. Right. So
that kind of leads into another question. Through being exposed to what's going on in North Carolina and Florida and all these other regions, through these board meetings and other travels that you've done, I'm sure, how do you see the work of the ministry and the farm worker movement that it's involved with in California as unique?
As unique?
Yeah. Or is it, are there aspects of it that are particular to...
Well, there are aspects that are very satisfying. I mean, one recent one was the fact that we were part of a delegation that went to see the British Council in Los Angeles, and she was very receptive. And then the British American Tobacco Company in London agreed to sit down and meet with Flock and look into the conditions of farm workers there. That's always exciting when you win a battle, although it's not won yet, but it's moving in a good direction. We were involved in the Taco Bell boycott for the Coalition of Immokalee Workers because the headquarters of Taco Bell are in Orange County in Irvine, California. And that was a very long and hard struggle. The workers would come out in the spring when they could get time off from their jobs in the field. And they would do marches and prayers and fasting and sit-ins and all kinds of things. And I remember one year I felt terrible because it rained. They had canopies up and tents to sleep in at night, and the police made them take it down, and they got soaked, and some of them got sick, and it was awful. But eventually, and we had prayer services every night to encourage the pastors and so on, right out on the street. It was a great educational tool as well. I mean, we invited people from the churches to come and see what it was all about and get to meet the workers, and several churches housed the workers when they weren't sleeping on the street. The Congregational Church and the Presbyterian Church of Anaheim also housed workers one year. The St. Mark Presbyterian in Newport Beach also housed workers. And we had this great letter about what we believed in, and the Taco Bell wouldn't even unlock the door to accept our letter. We had to slide it under the door. Can you believe that? Anyway, after, you know, after they agreed to pay a penny a pound more to farm workers or tomato pickers and establish the code of conduct, then Burger King and McDonald's and Subway fell in line, did the same thing. Not in that order. I'm sorry, I've got the order a little mixed up. And the large catering, food catering services. But the supermarkets still haven't agreed to do this, with the exception, I think, of Whole Foods. The large supermarkets have not agreed. So there are plenty of battles out there. I just finished on Sunday speaking to a group about this very these issues. They weren't necessarily Christians; it was Women For, but they're a progressive group of women, so they were very sympathetic to the situation. I don't know that I have the answer of how you convince people who are naturally opposed or don't see that as the role of the church. Or the role of Christians. I think sometimes we look at our faith and our role too narrowly, and we think it's just between us and God, our spiritual lives. But it's, you know, we're all God's children, and it should go out this, you know, horizontally as well as vertically.
The way you said a minute ago, the Presbyterian Church taking things in, and I should confess, I'm Presbyterian as well.
Oh, are you?
So I'm curious how this work and some of the comments you're making about, you know, the church churches seeing things too narrowly, and well, I don't know, over your time with the National Farm Worker Ministry, how's your relationship to the Presbyterian Church in particular? Changed or developed?
Well, you know, it was a big blow to me. I admit it. And what happened in Corcoran, and as a result, although the Methodist Church was very welcoming and the Episcopal Church was very welcoming, and I went back to Union that summer to take some more classes and
Union in New York. That's where you went to seminary.
Yes. And I was invited to go to the Episcopalian headquarters, and they wanted to know all about what happened and so on. And the rector, the Episcopal rector in Corcoran, was very supportive. So, you know, it just varies from place to place and depends a lot about the personnel who are involved. But while I was overseas, I was in Muslim countries all that time, so it was easy to turn my back on the church, although I did find a church and that I worshipped in while I was in Baghdad. But we lived in a village for some time, and there was my husband did his village service, and I never saw a church, and I didn't really care then. But happily now I'm an elder in my church, it's a very progressive church, and we have a very active peace and justice committee, and that church is doing all kinds of good things, and it makes me very pleased. So.
How have you changed or been impacted by this long-term work with the farm worker movement through the National Farm Worker Ministry?
I think after what happened in Corcoran, I was very reticent to speak up, and for several years, and gradually that's changed. I'm not such a scaredy cat anymore, and I'm more vocal. But I don't get into arguments with people. I just try to point out things, and if people are receptive, great. If they're not, that's too bad. But we had prayer vigils at our church for the farm workers who died. Let's see, that That wasn't last summer. That was the summer before, 2 years ago. And we're doing the fundraiser for the ministry in my church again. You know, this will be the third year that we've done it. So, and it's the pastor is very supportive. And there's a guy there who's a great chef, and he prepares the meals. And he sees that as his gift to the ministry. And so he, because of his contribution and the support of the Peace and Justice Committee, we're able to give all the money we take in to the ministry. And that's not the case with the union fundraiser, because we usually have it in a union hall, and we have to pay for the hall, and we have to pay for the chef, and you know, there are a lot more costs involved. But still, people are very generous. Some people donate the flower centerpieces, and we have a group that does music for us, and occasionally we find somebody who will print the newsletter for us, and we're trying to send it out by email more to save postage and printing costs. So we're getting a little smarter.
We share a story of a particularly meaningful experience that you've had with farm workers themselves, like in a labor camp or through your experience with the ministry.
I just remember when I was living in Corcoran how welcoming and hospitable people were, and how generous with whatever they had. They were always willing to share, and they were so grateful for your interest and your concern. And the Corcoran experience was kind of long ago, so I remember families and I remember certain children, but I don't, and I'm having a hard time thinking of a specific story. I remember, this isn't a farm worker, this was Dr. Bruce Jessup from Stanford was doing a study of health care in the farm labor camps, and he was, he's a great doctor, a very compassionate doctor, and he was really concerned about health care for farm workers. But if you mentioned to him that maybe we should have clinics that serve the farm workers and it should be free for everyone, then he would back off and say that's socialized medicine. So, thank goodness we have more clinics than we used to, but still they're not accessible. They're not where they ought to be. When I think about, if you listen to the stories of those farm workers that died, they died mostly because there wasn't a clinic nearby, or the contractor or the boss wouldn't call for an ambulance or wouldn't provide transportation to a clinic, or misdiagnosed what was happening. They don't have first aid things there, and they don't have water, and they should. I mean, the penalty should be stiffer. I mean, this young woman, I'm drawing a blank on her name, Maria Isabel, who died 18 years old. I mean, she was strong and healthy, and she shouldn't have died, but there wasn't water. So, and then when she fainted, they didn't take her anywhere. And by the time they got her to a clinic, her fever was something, her temperature was something like 106. I mean, it was too late. So this is inexcusable.
The migrant deaths, or the farm worker deaths that you're talking about from the heat exposure, is this something you see as having emerged in the just near past? Is this a relatively new phenomenon, or has this been around for a while?
I think it's been around for a while, but they just started keeping track of those deaths in the last few years. And I understand there are two this year. I haven't heard the stories of the two that died I mean, the circumstances, I'm not up on that. I'm sure Virginia is. Yeah. And Lucy, because, you know, it's California.
Well, what's something that you would say to people who might be interested in getting involved with the National Farm Worker Ministry today?
Well, to begin with, the UFW makes it very easy to be on their email list, and they send out pleas for advocacy usually every week, sometimes twice a week. And all you have to do is punch in that you want to take an action on that issue. It's very simple. They make that very easy. Of course, letters are worth more than an email, and a handwritten letter or hand-typed, you know, not a form letter, is worth more than a form letter. So that's something that churches can do, individual Christians can do. And I think politicians keep track of the number of letters they receive. And, of course, a phone call is worth even more. And I think they keep count of those, that it influences their decision. But, gosh, we really bombarded Governor Brown with that Fair Treatment for Farmworker Act. I can't believe he must have gotten a lot of calls on the other side. That's all I can think of. Because you remember, you don't remember, but when he was governor before, he set up the Farm Labor Relations Board in California. But that board was only as effective as the people that were appointed to it. And so I hate to sound partisan, but while we had Republican governors, mostly they were people who represented the growers on that board. But when Governor Brown was governor before, he appointed people who understood the problems of farm labor, and it was more effective. So I really was unprepared for him to veto it. And the only thing I can think of is that this all happened at the same time as our budget crisis, and trying to get together and compromise on a budget was so stressful and so difficult. And I don't know whether he couldn't concentrate on two things at once, or he was afraid that if he signed that bill that he would have a harder time getting Republicans to sign the budget. I would give anything to know. Maybe there is somebody that knows, but it's not me.
So what do you think is the next step?
For us in California, that's obviously the next step. And that's why workers are out there walking as we speak, or marching to Sacramento. I think they plan to arrive in Sacramento on September the 4th. And I guess the legislature has passed it again. They passed it at least five times, both branches, largely on partisan lines. But Governor Schwarzenegger vetoed it at least three times. Maybe four, but I know at least three. And now Governor Brown has vetoed it, but they're ready to try again. And at the same time, we've been working on the DREAM Act. That's another thing that Christians can get involved in, because that affects kids who were brought here by their parents. They didn't know what was happening to them, and they showed potential, and they're doing well in school, and they should have a chance to an education, and it will help all of society if they are educated and able to contribute to our culture. And, of course, we need to do the immigration bill as well, and the ag jobs bill. There's plenty to work on. No end of issues.
Plenty of work to do. Well, is there any other comment that you'd like to make, or a story that you'd like to share?
I wish I could think of something funny or amusing. I remember being out in the parking lots leafleting, and and Roy Giordano telling it, you know, and people were harassing us and telling us we weren't supposed to be there and so on. And I guess the law has changed since then because Roy said the parking lots are public property and you can do anything you want to here. I mean, you have the right to leaflet and so on, so long as you don't obstruct entrance into the store. And but now they're ever so much more comfortable careful about where people stand. And when we were demonstrating against Chase Bank, JP Morgan Chase Bank, because of the flock in North Carolina, they only wanted us on the sidewalk, and they were watching us from inside the bank to make sure we didn't leave the sidewalk. And once we were in front of Whole Foods, then they called the police on us. So there are some amusing incidents. They didn't do anything. They just told us to stop. So. The entrance to so many, in California, the way shopping malls are set up, the parking is in the middle, and the entrances to the stores are off the parking lots, so there's not a sidewalk that you can stand on that's so-called public property now. The sidewalks are on the outside. They're too far away from where people park and walk in, and so you couldn't, if you were standing out on the sidewalk, you couldn't reach anybody. So it's a little bit frustrating.
Cool. Well, I don't have any other questions. I know that you've had a long day. if you'd like to add anything else, I think that'd be great, or we could kind of close
wind things up.
Yeah.
If I think of something tonight or tomorrow, I'll tell you.
We can revisit tomorrow.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for waiting for me.
Yeah.